Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Deanne Lunan, who's an attorney with the National Consumer Law Centre and the director of its Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. She assists attorneys representing low-income consumers and teaches consumer law to legal services, private consumer attorneys, and other advocates. She's the author of the Centre's publication, Student Loan Law and Guide to Surviving Debt, as well as a latest study, The Student Loan Default Trap. Welcome to Background Briefing, Deanne Lunan.
Thanks so much.
And of course, on Monday, Senator Harkin's Senate committee came out with this report after a two-year investigation. That's the so-called HELP Committee of the United States Senate, the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. This is a really damning report by any measure, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Extremely troubling.
And I guess since you've been monitoring this industry for some time, you're not entirely surprised. But do you think that the American public are going to wake up to this problem?
Well, I sure hope so. I think that it shows that it's not just a few bad apples, which is often what the industry says, but there's rampant fraud and abuse in the for-profit sector.
Well, the taxpayers spend $32 billion a year to operate these for-profit colleges, and the majority of the students they enroll leave without a degree, half of them within 4 months. The report accuses this for-profit college industry of having exorbitant tuition fees, aggressive recruiting practices, abysmal student outcomes, taxpayer dollars spent on marketing and pocketed as profits, and regulatory evasion and manipulation. And went on to say that these practices are the norm and are systemic in the industry. It's fairly hard to find any defense. What do you think will be the next stage in terms of this study having some legislative outcome or some real impact on the problems that this study reveals?
Well, a lot of it's a matter of political will in Congress and also in the administration to take some real action, both in terms of policy reform and also to enforce the existing laws so that the laws on the books are real hammers for the people who deserve to be hammered. So it's not just a matter of passing new laws. There are ways that both states and the federal government can do some enforcement and make sure that the schools are accountable.
Well, given some of the findings, the priorities of these colleges, and many of which now are on Wall Street and are owned by private equity firms, the colleges that this report studied had a total of 32,496 recruiters compared to 3,512 staff members, meaning teachers. I mean, that's an amazing disproportion of recruiters as opposed to teachers.
Right. I mean, I think that's one of the main problems is this is really about growth and getting students in the door. It's an industry that's almost entirely dependent on federal dollars for the students to pay for the supposed educations. So hopefully this will pull back the curtain and let us see what's really going on. It's not that there can't be flexibility in education. It's not that everybody has to go to a traditional four-year school. There should be flexibility, but there also needs to be accountability.
Again, I'm speaking with Deanne Lunan, who is an attorney with the National Consumer Law Center and the director of the Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. She's the author of the center's publication, Student Loan Law and Guide to Surviving Debt, as well as the latest study out, The Student Loan Default Trap. Now, in terms of the student loan default trap, the Harkin report that came out on Monday talked about how these for-profit colleges in effect disguise the default, and many of the for-profit colleges try to move students having trouble with repayment into deferral or forbearance until they are past the years that the government monitors. Explain to me that loophole and how to close it.
Well, there is what's called the official default rate or the cohort default rate, And those are the statistics that we usually see about what the default rate is by sector in the federal loan programs. And that default rate only tracks borrowers for a short period of time after they leave school or after they graduate. So what the schools try to do in many cases is make their numbers look better by placing borrowers into the shortest term options like forbearances, which aren't necessarily the best options for the borrowers, but it allows them to move from forbearance to forbearance during that period that they're tracked. And that way, the default rate doesn't look as bad as it should if it truly reflected the number of borrowers who are in default or who aren't able to repay. And the schools do that because if their default rates are too high, they potentially face sanctions.
Well, the report out on Monday from Senator Harkin's committee, the U.S. Senate's Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee, this after a two-year investigation into for-profit colleges, mentioned, for example, how Westwood College, a Westwood College recruiter, and frankly, I've never heard of Westwood College, but here in Los Angeles, of course, UCLA is in the suburb of Westwood, so I guess it has some patina to it, that name. They were told that the cost, prospective students were told that the cost was $4,800 per term, but what they weren't told was that this involves 5 to 6 terms a year rather than the usual 2 to 3. I mean, that seems like flagrant trickery.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one example of a lot of blatant misrepresentations at the front end when they're trying to bring the students into the door. And then the default rate statistic that you mentioned shows how borrowers are harmed when they don't get the proper outcomes, they don't complete, they don't get jobs as promised, and they're not able to repay the loans. It's even more important because the consequences of being in default on federal student loans are so dire, and people face potentially having their tax refunds taken with no time limit. The government can literally come after them forever.
But the point here is, of course, is that these for-profit colleges find ways to have these student loans funneled through them. Why not have the government loan directly to the students? Wasn't that what the original Pell Grants were supposed to be about?
Well, the Pell Grants also go through the schools, and so, frankly, there's problems in the Pell Grant program, too. It's just that it's a problem for taxpayers in the sense that there's a lot of dollars going to those schools, but the students aren't stuck with the debt because those are grants as opposed to loans. So one thing to do would be to look at alternative ways to disperse the money, but really the problem is that the schools themselves have to be accountable for their outcomes. Because even if the money goes directly to the schools, if the student doesn't succeed, doesn't get the education that's promised, and still isn't able to repay the loan, they're going to be in trouble regardless of what the source of the loan was.
Well, the report indicates, for example, Deanne Lunan, the Apollo Group, which operates the University of Phoenix, which is the largest for-profit college, they got $1.2 billion in Pell Grants in 2010 and 2011, which is up from $24 million only a decade earlier. And on top of that, Apollo got $210 million more in benefits under the post-9/11 GI Bill. So explain to us how these for-profit colleges now are double-dipping. Not only do they get the federal student loan money, upon which most of their students default, but they also apparently have got their hooks into the GI Bill.
Yeah, no, the industry's grown astronomically, and a lot of that has to do with the Wall Street dollars and the fact that a lot of these companies are publicly funded now. But a lot of it has to do with the demand for higher education and the lack of public support for a lot of the public sector institutions. So there are a lot of people who are seeking education and don't have a place to go. They're recruited very heavily by these schools. They believe the promises from these schools. And so a lot more students are signing up for those schools. And as the sector grows, so does the federal dollars that flows to it.
Yeah, but the only reason, as far as I can tell, that the students believe this is that they are able to advertise on television. I see, for example, something called Capella, another one of these new shingles, advertising all the time. whenever I see these ads for these for-profit colleges, I have to pinch myself and realize that that is taxpayer dollars that are doing this. So the taxpayer is paying these companies who pay their executives up to $7.3 million in the case of the chief executive of Strayer Education, who also made $41 million in 2009 from stock options. These companies, the reason they're able to recruit these students is through the deceptive advertising that the taxpayer pays for God's sake.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and that's the saddest part of all this. But the point is that there are students or young people and, frankly, people of all ages who are looking to go to school and don't necessarily have options in the traditional four-year sector. And so there is that demand. The point is that we want that demand to be met with quality educations and not to be met with these false promises.
Again, I'm speaking with Deanne Lunan, who's an attorney with the National Consumer Law Center and the director of the Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. She's the author of the center's publication, Student Loan Law and Guide to Surviving Debt, as well as the latest study, The Student Loan Default Trap. So the study that's been released Monday from the United States Senate's Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, which is culminating a two-year-long investigation into the for-profit college industry. Among the 30 companies that they looked into, an average of 22.4% of the revenues, that's 90% of which are taxpayer money, I might add, 22.4% of the revenues went to marketing and recruiting, 19.4% to profits, and 17.7% to instruction. So you get the impression that they're only colleges in name, that's the lowest priority.
Right, and that's, again, the tragedy of all this is that this is often a very vulnerable population who isn't necessarily served in all cases by the public sector or by the traditional schools. They're looking to better themselves through education, and the product that's being sold is not an education.
So what went on with this committee in terms of they're trying to sort of suggest that this is some partisan thing on the part of the Democrats? I mean, is there anybody challenging these findings? Is anybody coming up with any way to suggest that there's anything in this report that's not true?
No, it's a political smokescreen, frankly. It's become a partisan battle when really this is an objective investigation. In general, the opponents are not citing the facts. They're either just coming up with excuses or they're claiming that the information is biased because some of the information, for example, the sources for it were short sellers on Wall Street. And because they were shorting the industry, they had a conflict of interest. But they're not disputing the actual information.
So in terms of how this came about, Deanne Lunan, it must have a lot to do with the fact that the Congress has enabled this since it's all taxpayer money. So then you have to ask yourself, well, how did the Congress enable this? And apparently that kind of disgrace is a bipartisan one, even though the Republicans on the committee rejected the findings, even though they couldn't find anything wrong with the actual report. It's clear the Republicans are supporting these for-profit colleges, but I believe they also get support from Democrats as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's not everybody on both sides of the aisle who is to blame, but in the sense of campaign contributions and the way that this industry has bought a lot of politicians, that's happened on both sides of the aisle.
So the report says that the companies that examined spent $8 million on lobbying in 2010 and another $8 million in the first 9 months of 2011. So that's what they do. They spend $8 million a year, roughly, on lobbying, and they get back $32 billion, right?
I mean, right. It's a good investment for them.
And a tragic investment for these students. That's the part of it that I find heartbreaking.
Absolutely. It shatters their dreams, it shatters their lives, and those are the clients who we work with. And again, these are people who are trying to better themselves, better their lives through education. That's what they think they're buying.
So describe what it's like with the clients that you have, Deanne Lunan, at the National Consumer Law Center, where she's the director of the Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. Describe the people who come into your door, the problems they have, and more importantly, you know, what can be done about it?
So most of the people we see are what they call non-traditional students, meaning that they tend to be a little bit older. In some cases, that means just more than 25, but they don't fit the profile of a young 18-year-old who's a dependent, maybe living with parents and looking at a four-year school. A lot of these clients that we have already been to school before and didn't finish for various reasons and are now trying to go back. Most of them have their own dependents, and a lot of them are actually working while they're going to school. In a lot of cases, they're doing their best to move up to a better job. A lot of them are working in low-wage jobs or not working at all. So all of these things are sort of coming together, and they're hearing the social message, the society message out there, which I think is a good message, that if you go get more education, you're more likely to succeed. Sometimes they're trying to educate themselves for a specific career. Sometimes it's something more general than that. But that's the profile. And then, unfortunately, by the time we see them, they've already been to the school. In most cases, they did not complete the program because it was an inferior program or because the promises that were made were not true and they weren't able to get what they thought they were going to get. They come to us because they're struggling to repay the student loan debt, which is the burden that's left that they have left. Then they don't have the degree or the certificate or anything else that's actually going to move them forward financially.
Well, just in closing, Deanne Lunan, the students at for-profit colleges make up 13% of the nation's college enrollment, but they account for 47% of the defaults on loans. And about 96% of students at for-profit colleges take out loans, compared with 13% at community colleges and 48% at four-year public universities. So there you have this outrageous comparison. And what I don't understand is why the taxpayer, because of corruption in Congress, is spending $32 billion a year on these for-profit colleges who've essentially found a way to simply steal from the Treasury. Why not invest this money in the community colleges and in public universities? Here in the state of California, they're eviscerating the University of California system, which is one of the best in the world, and they're also eviscerating the community college system because of the state budget crunch.
Absolutely. There needs to be more public investment in education, and we need to do right by these student borrowers. I mean, the industry cynically says these are at-risk borrowers, so of course a lot of them don't succeed. And that's the most cynical argument of all. They can succeed. These students who are at risk, non-traditional students, they can succeed, but they deserve the same kind of quality of education as other student borrowers are getting.
So do you think that this report will get some traction and people will realize, the taxpayer will realize, that on the one hand, they're watching the state of California, for example, cut funds from public education. On the other hand, there's an open trough here at the federal treasury that these crooks on Wall Street and others are just stealing money from. I mean, it's pretty glaring, isn't it?
You would hope so, and it certainly should get the attention, but it's mostly become sort of a political football and a bipartisan bickering. But we hope that everyone can rally around both caring for the students themselves, but also caring for the incredible waste of taxpayer dollars.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Deanne Lunan.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Deanne Lunan, who's an attorney with the National Consumer Law Center and the director of its Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. She assists attorneys representing low-income consumers and teaches consumer law to legal services, private consumer attorneys, and other advocates. She's the author of the Center's publication, Student Loan Law and Guide to Surviving Debt, as well as the latest study, The Student Loan Default Trap. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the riots in nearby Anaheim and the lack of representation for the majority of Latinos in the community.
deals made to cope. Ideas in decline. Rise of the laws. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hey, here we stand. Slave to networks, master plans. Swags the brand, open a can. Chains off still, y'all never ran. But